Hi, everyone. Welcome to this random bonus episode.
Bonus!
So the story is that Zane asked us to record something not longer than 15 minutes for the musical Stormy Everything I Know Christmas episode.
But us didn't.
We're verbose.
We like a chat.
We like a chat and we like discussing a crime.
Yep.
Particularly a murder. It's kind of what we're known for around these parts. Murder. So if you listen to the musical Stormy Everything I Know episode, you've already heard a little chunk of this. So this is the full episode.
Full episode about musicians.
That have
been
murdered.
Five musicians that have been murdered and a bonus one.
A bonus,
was it a
murder?
Was it not a murder?
You decide. Vote on our poll. No, there's no poll.
There's no poll. But here we go.
Here we go.
I'm also here. I'm on all the podcasts.
We begged Zane to be a part of this.
Not that you aren't here every single fucking time we record, though, hey?
You're just audible.
Yeah, I'm usually in the background clicking.
And laughing silently.
And laughing. And also, like, gesturing to the skies when we say another horrific
thing.
Why
are people so terrible?
Correct.
We'd love to find that out, but we just never will.
You should introduce yourselves.
Sorry. My name's Jess. I have been on this podcast before.
My name's Ellen, and I have not.
It's true. Jess is one of our guest hosts.
I am. I'm the swing host on I was about to say Murder in the Land of Oz. No, musicals taught me everything I know.
But this is her real podcast.
This is my real job. Murder in the Land of Oz.
It is a job.
Stunning.
It's a slog.
I mean, it's a lot of research, so I still count it as work. And we're going to talk to you about our five picks of musicians that have been murdered.
Yeah. Zane was like, well, you can do something music related. You can do something murder related. And we were like, how about murdered musicians? And Zane was like,
Sounds right.
That's almost verbatim.
Yeah. I just wanted to say before we start, this is not like a countdown, like
no.
From like our least favorite to our most favorite murdered musicians. It's just five musicians
but
who have been murdered.
There are at least a couple on there that are interesting to research.
Yeah.
Oh, I would like to think that all of them are interesting.
Well, one I didn't know about.
Yes.
So there's that.
Yeah. You learn something new every day.
Well, let's go. Let's just go.
Let's go.
Smash right into it.
So I'm going to start out with Sam Cooke. So Sam Cooke was born on January 22nd, 1931. He was known professionally as Sam Cooke. His full name is Samuel, just for anyone that's wondering.
Damn. What a plot twist.
I can't swear on this podcast because Julie and Miranda will get mad at me.
Wait, are we not allowed to swear? That's very off-brand for us.
Don't worry. This particular episode, everyone swore.
R18 plus.
Yeah. Okay. Musicals is one of our only PG podcasts.
So. And it's so funny. Every time I go on, I'm like, fuck this and fuck that.
It's true.
So good. So he was influential as both a singer and as a composer. He's commonly known as the King of Soul for his distinctive vocals and importance within popular music. He began singing as a child and joined the Soul Stirrers before moving to a soul career where he scored a string of hit songs like You Send Me, A Change Is Gonna Come, Wonderful World, Chain Gang, Twistin' the Night Away, and Bring It On Home to Me.
I was a huge Sam Cooke fan just out of high school.
Really?
That's on brand for you, Zane.
That's so on brand. His pioneering contributions to soul music contributed to the rise of Aretha Franklin, Bobby Womack, Al Green, Curtis Mayfield, Stevie Wonder, Marvin Gaye, and Billy Preston.
Interesting.
So, he was murdered.
He was moited.
So, Cooke died at the age of 33 on December 11th, 1964, at the Hacienda Motel at 9137 South Figuerera Street in Los Angeles, California.
You can visit it. You want to go?
You want to go there? We'll go there. We'll go there next year.
We'll go there next year.
You know, I've been to LA and on almost every corner
someone has been murdered.
Of murder houses or stars
hotels
houses.
Where stars have overdosed.
There is the murder museum. There's the murder museum.
Oh, I want to go there so
bad. We
got to
go there so bad, doll.
God.
It is great for people just like you two.
Big old weirdos.
Big old weirdos that want to go to places where people have been killed. I was thinking, should we go to Chicago so we can do the HH Holmes tour?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely,
you
right?
You just bought Devil in the White City.
I did.
I've read it.
Let's go.
I'm obsessed.
Let's do it.
Okay, all right. There we go. Murder Tour of Oz. The USA. Different country.
Of USA.
Anywho. Answering separate reports of a shooting and of a kidnapping at the motel, police found Cook's body clad only in a sports jacket and shoes, but no shirt, pants, or underwear. He had
bold choice.
Yeah, what a fashion choice, right? What a time. He sustained a gunshot wound to the chest, which was later determined to have pierced his heart. Ugh. The motel's manager, Bertha Franklin, said she had shot Cook in self-defense after he broke into her office residence and attacked her. Her account was immediately disputed by Cook's acquaintances. The official police record states that Franklin fatally shot Cook, who had checked in earlier that evening. Franklin said that Cook had broken into the manager's office apartment in a rage, wearing nothing but a shoe and a sports coat, demanding to know where the whereabouts of a woman who had accompanied him to the hotel. Franklin said the woman was not in the office and that she told Cook this, but the enraged Cook did not believe her and violently grabbed her, demanding again to know the woman's whereabouts. According to Franklin, she grappled with Cook. The two of them fell to the floor and then she got up and ran to retrieve a gun. She said she then fired at Cook in self-defense because she feared for her life. Cook was struck once in the torso. According to Franklin, he exclaimed, "Lady, you shot me." Before mounting,
she sure did, Sam. She sure did.
Before mounting a last charge at her, she said she beat him over the head with a broomstick before he finally fell mortally wounded by the gunshot.
Less of a fan of Sam Cooke now.
The motel's owner, Evelyn Carr, said that she had been on the telephone with Franklin at the time of the incident. Carr said she had overheard Cook's intrusion and the ensuing conflict and gunshot. She called the police to request that officers go to the motel, telling them she believed a shooting had occurred. A coroner's inquest was convened to investigate the incident. The woman who had accompanied Cook to the motel was identified as Elise Boyer, who had also called the police that night shortly before Carr had. Boyer had called from a telephone booth near the motel telling them she had just escaped being kidnapped. Told the police that she had met Cook earlier that night and spent the evening in his company. And she said that they left a local nightclub together. She had repeatedly requested that he take her home, but instead he took her against her will to the Hacienda Motel. She said that once in one of the motel rooms, Cook physically forced her onto the bed and that she was certain he was going to rape her. According to Boyer, when Cook stepped into the bathroom for a moment, she quickly grabbed her clothes and ran from the room. She said that in her haste, she also scooped up most of Cook's clothing by mistake. She said she ran first to the manager's office, knocked on the door seeking help. However, she said that the manager took too long in responding, so fearing Cook would soon be coming after her, she fled from the hotel before the manager even opened the door. She said she then put clothing back on, hid Cook's clothing, went to a telephone booth and called the police.
Think about that next time you're listening to A Wonderful World.
Some of Cook's family and supporters, however, have rejected Boyer's version of the events, as well as those given by Franklin and Carr. They believe there was a conspiracy to murder Cook and that the murder took place in some manner entirely different from the three official accounts. Singer Etta James viewed Cook's body before his funeral and questioned the accuracy of the official version of the events. She wrote that the injuries she observed were well beyond the official account of Cook having fought Franklin alone. James wrote that Cook was so badly beaten that his head was nearly separated from his shoulders. His hands were broken and crushed, his nose mangled. Some people have speculated that Cook's manager, Alan Klein, might have had a role in his death. Klein owned Tracy Limited, which ultimately owned all the rights to Cook's recordings. No concrete evidence supporting a criminal conspiracy has been presented to date.
Whack.
200,000 fans lined up for more than four city blocks to view his body.
Like one by one?
Whoa!
Would you go to a public viewing of body?
Have you guys seen? Have you guys?
Would you
absolutely? Would one probably not?
Maybe that's the difference between.
Have you guys been to
just
a viewing, like in the normal context of viewing a body? Yeah.
No, I've never seen a body. I'm talking a big game, but I think I would faint. But I would do it. But I would faint.
It's fucking confronting. To be honest, I don't know.
I cry when I see like dead magpies on the footpath. So aww. I don't think that I would really function. I'd be like, I can see a dead body.
Guys,
I'm messed up, man.
Guys, look at Fifi.
She's very cute. Aww. She's sleeping in a very
adorable
fashion.
She's sleeping with her head stood up. Mew, 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 mew. All right. That's Sam Cooke.
Fun and exciting for all involved. Not remotely.
Twists and turns.
Question mark? Yes.
Yes, indeed.
Big old question mark.
So our next case, oh my God, which was foreshadowed in Jess's, Marvin Gaye. I was today years old when I found out that Marvin Gaye was murdered.
Same.
It's the year of our Lord 2018. I cannot believe I didn't know that Marvin Gaye was murdered. If you don't know who Marvin Gaye is, that's really embarrassing. He is... Born on the 2nd of April, 1939, he is a singer, songwriter, and Motown legend, and he wrote the two most famous songs about fucking, sexual healing, and Let's Get It On. Very glad we can swear in this podcast. So...
Oh, I'm just waiting. Yeah,
that got
Jess
good. I'm just going to steamroll ahead.
All right, go.
So Marvin Gaye's father was called Marvin Gaye Sr. And I'm going to call Marvin Gaye Sr. Marvin Gaye Sr. And I'm going to call Marvin Gaye the singer Marvin.
Right.
For clarity's sake.
Right.
So Marvin and Marvin Gaye Sr. did not have a very good relationship spanning back to when Marvin was a child. Marvin Gaye Sr. was a preacher and was very strict and would physically punish his children. He disagreed with Marvin's career as a singer and the two never got along. Probably as a preacher, he was like, stop singing songs about fucking. It's embarrassing.
Low-key, just stop singing about fucking, please. Mm-hmm.
So in 1983, Marvin, who was then 44 years old, moved into his parents' house to help care for her mother, who was recovering from surgery. Marvin Gaye Sr. wasn't staying at the house for all of this time period, but when he was, the relationship between him and his son was quite negative, with frequent fighting and arguing, so bad that Marvin's sisters actually stopped staying at the household. On April 1st, 1984, Marvin Gaye Sr. and his wife, Marvin's mother, Alberta, were having this like prolonged argument about a letter that had been lost that was relating to an insurance policy. I don't really know what was involved in the letter, but they'd been having this argument for like days about who lost this letter, where the letter was, et cetera, et cetera. Marvin was really close to his mother and not remotely close to his father. So he was kind of jumping to Alberta's defense during these arguments. And he actually told Marvin Gaye Sr. to clear out of the house. So on this day, April 1st, 1984, at around 12:30 p.m., Marvin Gaye Sr. was yelling at Alberta about this letter. Marvin came running in and ordered his father to leave the room. Marvin Gaye Sr. refused to do so. So Marvin started pushing and shoving to get him out of the room and then began kicking and punching him quite brutally. Alberta managed to separate the two and Marvin went into his bedroom. At 12:38 p.m., Marvin Gaye Sr. came into Marvin's bedroom with a 38 caliber pistol that his son had bought him for Christmas, pointed it at Marvin and shot him directly in the heart.
Are you fucking joking me? He killed his son?
He shot his son because he was like yelling at his wife over an insurance letter.
Lessons we've learned.
Yeah.
Do not buy your father a gun for Christmas.
Bad idea. Do not buy guns, period. America, I'm looking at you here. So the shot entered the right side of Marvin's chest, perforating his right lung, heart, diaphragm, liver, stomach, and left kidney. So just all
like
the important
all the
ones.
Important shit. Oh my God.
His appendix was fine. Everything else.
Oh, guys. Yeah.
Torn to ribbons. Marvin Gaye Sr. took a step forward and shot him again at point blank range. Alberta left the room, pleading with Marvin Gaye Sr. not to shoot her as well. The police were called and Marvin was taken to hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival at approximately 1:01 p.m.
This is fucking wild.
How does everybody not know this? Are we the dumb ones? How did we not know this? So in a police interview, Marvin Gaye Sr. stated that he only meant to shoot Marvin in self-defense, and he didn't know the gun was loaded, which is like, okay, maybe when you shot him the first time, you didn't realize the gun was loaded, but then you stepped forward and shot him again.
And I only meant to shoot him in self-defense while he was in bed.
When he was in his bedroom, shot once already and then shot again. Like, oh, but I was, what? Come off it, Marvin Gaye Sr. He was asked by police if he loved his son, and he responded, "Let's just say I didn't dislike him."
Oh, that's not the right answer, Marvin Gaye Sr.
Oh my God. Let's just say I don't dislike it.
It's rough. The case was brought to trial, and Marvin Gaye Sr. pleaded no contest to voluntary manslaughter as part of a plea bargain.
Aww.
And please hold on to your hats. He was sentenced to a 6-year suspended sentence with 5 years probation.
Are you fucking joking me?
He appeared remorseful at the trial and stated that, "I'm really sorry for everything that happened. I loved him. I wish he could step through the door right now. I'm paying the price now." Now that you're at trial, you didn't love him when you shot him, Marvin Gaye Sr.
Jesus.
So no prison time.
No prison time at all.
Oh.
Nothing bad happened to Marvin Gaye Sr.
I hope he got diabetes.
How does no one know this?
People are going to write in and be like, "You guys are schmucks for not knowing this." Like,
I feel like a schmuck for not knowing this.
I feel like a schmuck. I just wanted to say in sum up that April 2nd is Marvin Gaye Day in Washington, D.C. So if you want to pull one out on April 2nd, you can do so in Washington, D.C. Nobody will judge you. Also, there was a conspiracy theory that was put forward by his sisters who were like, Marvin was like quite depressed at this time in his life, and he was a drug addict and an alcoholic and stuff like that. And they said like, Marvin knew that by like stepping to his father, he was going to get killed. They were like, it was known in our family that if you confronted our father about anything, he would kill you. So they were kind of like, Marvin essentially committed like suicide by cop.
How many children had he killed up to this point though?
Zero.
There's a difference between having an angry dad who will fight you if you talk to him.
Yeah.
And having, and then knowing that your father will literally shoot you twice.
Imagine just being like, oh, well, you know, my dad was pretty strict. He would literally murder us if we ever confronted him in any way. It was a known fact in our household that he would. So Marvin knew what he was doing. I question that. I think he was just.
People love to have conspiracy theories about musicians' deaths, I've found, regardless of what they're about.
Regardless of what happened. I think his dad was just an abusive dick. He is dead and he's probably in hell. So rough for you, Marvin Gaye Sr. Rough
for you. Oh, all right. Okay, we're going to bring it back down.
What?
Back down?
Back down.
No, we're going to bring it back down. Because we're talking about...
From the dizzying
Oh, yeah, okay. Alrighty, never mind. Moving on.
What do you mean?
Moving on.
What do you mean? What do I mean? Okay.
I mean,
so the next person I'm going to talk about is the really tragic murder of Christina Victoria Grimmie, who was an American singer, songwriter, actress, and YouTuber. So she was known for covering songs on YouTube and participating in the NBC competition, The Voice. June 2011, she released her debut EP, Find Me. In 2013, she released her studio album, With Love. In 2016, she released her second EP, Side A, and a posthumous release of Side B was made available on iTunes and Spotify. In 2014, Grimmie was a contestant on season 6 of The Voice and finished in third place. Adam Levine, her coach on the show, announced in the finale that regardless of the results, he would sign her to his label, 222 Records. Lil Wayne, I can't believe I just said the words Lil Wayne. Also,
you are the whitest person that has ever walked the planet.
Also offered to sign her to his label. So she obviously was a YouTuber, so she had gone to like things like, what's the VidCon thing?
VidCon,
like,
yeah, YouTube
conventions.
Stuff.
She was doing like lots of like touring and meeting people and stuff like that. She was a Christian lady. She was a big supporter of animal rights, fundraising for charities and stuff like that. So June 10th, 2016, Grimmie was shot by 27-year-old Kevin James Loiby while she signed autographs following her performance with Before You Exit at the Plaza Live in Orlando. Loibel was tackled by Grimmie's brother, but the gunman broke free, backed against a wall, and shot himself dead. So Grimmie was taken to Orlando Regional Medical Center in a critical condition with 3 gunshot wounds. She was pronounced dead just before 11 p.m. local time. And the autopsy revealed that Grimmie was shot once in the head and twice in the chest, and her death was declared a homicide. The Orlando Police Department said that Loibel had traveled by taxi cab to Orlando from his home in St. Petersburg, Florida, bringing 2 handguns, 2 extra magazines full of ammunition, and a hunting knife. Orlando Police Chief John Miner said, "We believe he came here to commit this crime." Loibel did not have an arrest.
You don't need to be a detective to work that one out. Yeah.
Loibel did not have an arrest record in his home county and did not appear to know Grimmie personally. Police did not offer a motive, but said Loibel had shown an unrealistic infatuation with the singer and tried to make himself more physically attractive through weight loss, hair, and eye surgery. Loibel's family said they were not aware of his plans to travel to Orlando, nor that he possessed any guns. Christina was buried at Berlin Cemetery in a private ceremony on June 16th. The following day, thousands of friends and fans attended a public memorial held in Medford, New Jersey.
Mm.
So bloody sad.
That's so awful.
And like in the aftermath, so Selena Gomez was actually performing a few miles away in Orlando. And when Grimmie was shot, had like they canceled the meet and greet that was scheduled as a part of like her Miami tour. The Plaza Live reopened about 4 days after the shooting, and management asked Orlando police to help evaluate the club's security. Some singers in Las Vegas, including Callie Tucker, another season 6 contestant on The Voice, were given escorts after their performances. In California, VidCon added metal detectives and security officers and banned informal meet and greets in the wake of Grimmie's shooting.
Wise decision.
Video personalities, including Joey Crucefa, were assigned personal security, and an industry attorney said that the extra measures were expensive and fans don't like it, but this is the new reality. So in December
20... Lucky that everyone has a gun.
In December 2016, 6 months after her murder, Grimmie's family filed a wrongful death lawsuit against several entities, including the concert promoter, the foundation that owns the venue, and the security company working the event. In January 2017, the venues requested that the judge dismiss the lawsuit, claiming Florida law does not allow business owners to be held liable for attacks on their property. A hearing on the motion to dismiss the lawsuit was set for May 23rd. The lawsuit was dismissed, but Grimmie's family were given an opportunity to refile the suit, and the judge complained that the suit did not make enough of a distinction between the concert promoter and the venue owner. May 2017, the family's attorney, Brian Kaplan, said that Grimmie's family will file a new complaint after a Florida judge dismissed the original lawsuit. April 9th, 2018, so this is the most recent, just a short of a year after the Grimmie family filed a new complaint in a Florida court, it was revealed that a judge rejected the defendants AEG Live and Orlando Philharmonic Orchestra Plaza Foundation motions to dismiss the case and has allowed the family's lawsuit to move forward. In their lawsuit, the Grimmie family alleges that the defendants failed to take adequate security measures to ensure the safety of the performers and the attendees of the concert venue. Grimmie's family is also being allowed to move forward on the claims of negligent infliction of emotional distress. The judge determined more research on the claims is needed before going forward. No time frame has been given on the next steps in the case or when a decision would be reached. I mean, look, like when I went to New York in 2015, every theater I went into, we got bag checked. Like, yeah, I feel like that's just a thing now. You need to check people's bags.
But I think Florida, I'm talking out my ass here. I think Florida has like, I know Florida has that like stand your ground law where you can like shoot somebody that enters your home. I think they have kind of like cash gun laws. I feel like they're one of those states where they're like.
They have casual concealed weapon laws.
Yeah. Like you, it's, I feel like in New York, you're not allowed to carry a gun, and maybe in Florida you are.
No, I know, but like, I just thought bag checks were a thing.
I mean, it's a post 9/11 world. I expect to walk through a metal detector and have a man.
I guess that's what the lawsuit is. Is trying to get them to change the law.
Yeah. Zane and I were non-verbally reacting to the fact that business owners can't be held responsible for crimes that happen on their property.
Weird, right?
I feel like that's a whack law.
Anyway, we've gone about double the length of time that we were meant to have. So do you really want to do another two or do you want to continue? I'm happy to let you continue. I'll give a warning before we pop it in.
I feel like we can probably wrap up.
What do you mean the two best ones we haven't covered yet?
Well, Zane didn't want it to be this long.
I'm just saying you're getting a lot more airtime than any other podcast.
But that's because we're your favorites, right? The sound that just came out of your mouth.
I'm incredibly jumpy at the moment and I don't know why. It's probably because I had this incredibly strong coffee and it's very late at night.
Okay, well, what's the next one?
John Lennon. Okay, so John Lennon is our next case. John Lennon is a member of the Beatles, the most famous band in the entire world.
Come together, blood now.
Thank you, Jess. For those of you that haven't heard the Beatles, that was the Beatles Come Together. I think everybody knows this story. So what's the point? Maybe we should just end the podcast here. Anyway, so on the 8th of December 1980 at around 5 p.m., a 25-year-old man named Mark David Chapman was waiting outside the Dakota Apartments in New York City where John Lennon lived. At this time, John Lennon and Yoko Ono, his wife, were walking to a limit.
What was that?
That was me peace signing for Yoko Ono. Oh, I don't know why I did that. John Lennon and Yoko Ono walking to a limo. Chapman stops John Lennon and asks for an autograph, which he gave, signing a copy of his album Double Fantasy. Chapman continued to wait outside the apartments until Lennon arrived again around 10:50 p.m. Lennon glanced at Chapman and nodded to him, greeting him as he recognized him from before, giving him an autograph. After Lennon walked past him, Chapman took out a .38 caliber revolver and fired 5 shots from a distance of 3 meters. 2 struck John Lennon in the back and 2 struck his shoulder. Lennon struggled up the steps to reception, bleeding profusely and crying, I'm shot, before falling to the floor. What we've learned is that people like to exclaim, I've been shot when they've been shot.
I'm interested in whether it's like shocked.
Yeah.
Or like.
Matter of fact.
It's like, oh no.
I feel like it's shot. I would be pretty shocked if somebody shot me.
That's true. When I'm shocked though, I usually go silent. Mm. I don't exclaim in shock.
I don't but know to be how fair, I would I've react been shocked to getting before. Shot.
Yeah. I mean, I would not want to be silent because I would want somebody to come and assist me.
Mm.
So probably screaming, I'm shot, will help people. Also, probably being John Lennon, people would be flocking to him anyway. Alrighty, so he struggles up the stairs screaming, I'm shot. The hotel staff attempted to assist him by like creating like a tourniquet to stop the bleeding. But once they opened the shirt, they realized that he was bleeding so much that there was really nothing they could do to help. So they called the police. Chapman was still waiting outside the apartments for the police and he was reading a copy of The Catcher in the Rye.
America's a great place.
I just, much confusion. So Chapman's waiting outside the apartment, casually reading The Catcher in the Rye. The doorman of the building is like, do you know what you've done? And Chapman replies, yes, I've just shot John Lennon.
Mad as a hatter.
So police arrive on the scene. 2 officers arrested Chapman while another 2 rushed to Lennon, who was bleeding profusely. Blood was soaking his clothes and surrounding the area around him. They decided there was no time to wait for an ambulance, so the officers rushed him to St. Luke's Roosevelt Hospital Center. The team at the hospital went completely above and beyond trying to save him. He had no pulse and he was not breathing on arrival, but they worked on him for 15 minutes anyway to try and resuscitate him, even going so far as to cut open his chest and trying to manually restart his heart.
Were some big Beatles fans.
Yeah. Lennon was too far gone and he was pronounced dead on arrival at 11:15 p.m. The doctors who tried to save his life reported that at the moment that he was pronounced dead, All My Loving by the Beatles came on the hospital speaker system.
Fuck off.
That was 100% a ghost. John Lennon was like, I'm going to mess with these people real bad.
You know, I'm not done.
I'm not
one
done.
One more thing before I leave. One more this thing. One coil.
Song. Just one more song.
Just one more. guys. Just one more.
Mark David Chapman's lawyers initially tried to mount an insanity defense, but as the trial neared, Chapman said that he wanted to plead guilty, which he did so, and was sentenced to 20 years to life in prison. He has been denied bail 10 times and remains in prison. The motivation for the murder was essentially that he like converted to Christianity and was cranky that John Lennon said that the Beatles were bigger than Jesus. He was like, well, nobody's bigger than Jesus. I take issue with this. But he was also like kind of woke because he was like, John Lennon is singing, his particular issue was with the song Imagine. And he's like, John Lennon is here singing like, imagine everybody being friends and stuff like that. And imagine there's no money. Imagine there's all this. But he's like the richer than God. So he was like, you're kind of a hypocrite. Also, nobody's bigger than Jesus. Bang, you're dead.
So you have trouble with someone saying that they're bigger than Jesus, but not with murder.
No.
Okay. And you're worried that someone else is a hypocrite.
Sense. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. You know who's not big on murder? God.
God. It's one of the big 10.
It's, yeah. There's only 10 rules you have to abide by, and one of them is don't murder.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the murder of John Lennon. So before we get to our not our top murder, but our last murder, we wanted to talk about a case that isn't a murder. Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun.
It's almost certainly not a murder. We are talking about Kurt Cobain. Zane was obsessed with Sam Cooke in his teenage years. I was very obsessed with Kurt Cobain.
Obsessed is a strong word. I was a fan.
I was a fan. I would also watch YouTube videos of him performing at MTV Unplugged like for hours at a time.
I do not see the appeal.
Don't speak ill of the dead, Jess.
I'm not speaking ill of the dead. I just...
You're speaking ill of the living, which is me and my taste in everything. So Kurt Cobain, everyone knows who Kurt Cobain is, not going to bother with the intro. So he was found dead from gunshot wounds to the head in his home on April 8th, 1994. So everybody with a cognitively functioning brain is like, Kurt Cobain, the depressed guy. Oh yeah, he killed himself. If you've ever listened to any of Nirvana's music, they're very...
Not upbeat.
Not upbeat. No. Not positive. He was diagnosed with bipolar disorder. He was clinically depressed, addicted to drugs, and he left a suicide note.
Mm.
All factors that led the police to declare the death a suicide.
I mean, that's a strong case, Ellen.
It's a pretty good case. A suicide note,
yeah.
It's pretty, you know... Open and shut case, but not to a little guy named Tom Grant, who is a private investigator who was hired by Courtney Love because Kurt Cobain had gone missing from a rehab center. She was like, yo, Tom, find Kurt Cobain. He's gone missing. And he was like, will do. Then he was found dead and he began to investigate the death. And he became convinced that Courtney Love was somehow responsible for Kurt's death. He believed that Courtney Love hired a hitman to murder Kurt Cobain.
I see.
There was a couple of pieces of evidence that Tom Grant...
Very audible inverted commas.
Yes. That led Tom Grant to believe that it was a murder, not a suicide. One of them was the suicide note itself. Grant believes that the suicide note was talking about him, which you can read the entire text of online. It was about him wanting to leave the music industry because it didn't actually say like, my name is Kurt Cobain and I'm going to kill myself. It was like, I'm unsatisfied with the music industry. I'm not happy being famous. My life is a series of pain and unhappiness. Therefore, yeah. I will kill myself, just kind of vaguely. And then at the end, he scrawled like, you know, to Frances, his daughter, to Courtney, like, I love you. Continue on without me, essentially. So he was like, not a suicide note. And the letters at the end talking about like saying goodbye to Frances and Courtney were written in a different hand, which handwriting analysis were like, not really.
Yeah.
Like, sure, but no. Handwriting analysis is not 100% like flawless science, but they were like, no, I'm pretty sure it's a suicide letter. And as he like continued writing, his hand got jerkier and jerkier, which is probably...
Drugs?
Drugs. Brings me on to my next point.
Ooh.
The huge amount of heroin that Kurt Cobain had in his system. There's no like blood alcohol content thing for heroin, but he had a ton of heroin in his system. And Tom Grant was like, he had so much heroin in his system that he could not have physically like been present enough to pick up a rifle and shoot himself in the mouth.
A rifle?
To which people who know stuff were like, He was a heroin addict and had been for many years, so he developed a tolerance. Mm. Also, he was trying to kill himself. So I feel like, what's a bit of heroin going to do to stop you?
What's a bit of heroin?
That's going on a t-shirt.
maybe not. And he also said that previously Kurt Cobain had been rushed to the hospital from an overdose on painkillers, and Courtney Love, he thought that Courtney Love had put a ton of painkillers in his champagne to try and kill him, which I kind of feel like, how much champagne would you realistically be drinking to like have consumed enough to...
How could you hide it in champagne?
How could you hide it in champagne enough to, not 100% sure. And then after it didn't work, Tom Grant says that she like pushed the narrative of it being a suicide attempt so she could cover her tracks later on when she successfully killed him.
Tell me, did this Tom Private Eye fellow make a lot of money from this theory?
Well, you can visit his website where you can purchase his multiple books for varying prices.
Okay.
He's written a lot of books and been on TV shows and YouTube videos.
So yes.
And so yes, in summary, yes.
Call me a skeptic.
Yeah. Call me a skeptic, but I think the suicidal person committed suicide. Mm. There's other bits of evidence. And honestly, like if you want to go on Reddit, you can read till the end of time conspiracy theories about Kurt Cobain not killing himself and it
Everybody
being Courtney Love's fault
Nirvana.
Or other people's fault. His like wife and like family and all his bandmates and stuff like, he killed himself.
Mm.
Shout out to Tom Grant for believing anyway.
But still like it's tough when like that sort of person, like it's tragic enough as it is, but to try and hurt someone who's still alive
who might
still be dealing with that tragedy.
Exactly. Yeah. It's real bad. So not a murder. Such a famous murder conspiracy though that we felt that we couldn't not include it.
Mm.
But he killed himself. End of story.
Yeah.
That's it. Leave it to Ellen from Australia.
Yep.
Final word. That's it.
It was it.
That Good. Was it.
Sorry, Tom.
I'm going to let Reddit know.
Please don't. They'll find where I live and kill me and make it look like a suicide.
Please don't do that. Okay, last one. Sorry this has taken so long.
It's good content.
The last one is the murder of Queen Selena. What a babe.
What a babe.
She's so
that
hot.
Movie with J-Lo.
Oh, my God. Iconic, right?
So iconic. Amazing.
So many looks, such a mood.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So Selena, I cannot pronounce her last name, so I'm not
Quintanilla.
Even. Quintanilla Perez was an American singer, songwriter, spokesperson, model, actress, fashion designer called the Queen of
Tiano.
Tiano music. She had an amazing collaboration with Mac after her death. She was among the most influential Latin artists of all time and is credited for catapulting a music genre into the mainstream market.
I listened to Selena the entire time researching these murders.
Really?
Yep.
Mm. She, aside from her music, Selena was active in her community and donated her time to civic causes. Coca-Cola appointed her its spokesperson in Texas.
Ooh.
Selena
that
became,
was a fun sound.
Selena became a sex icon. She was often criticized for wearing suggestive outfits. Nah, fuck that. That's slut shaming. I don't like that.
Don't do that here in 2018.
Mm. Every damn day. Selena and her guitarist Chris Perez eloped in April 1992 after her father raised concerns over their relationship. So her death. So fucking weird.
So unbelievably convoluted.
Okay. So the Quintanilla family appointed Yolanda Saldivar as the manager of Selena's boutiques in early 1994. 8 months earlier, Selena signed Saldivar as her registered agent in San Antonio, Texas. After the agreement, Saldivar moved from San Antonio to Corpus Christi to be closer to Selena. In December 1994, the boutiques began to suffer after the number of staff from both stores had decreased. According to staff members, Saldivar often dismissed employees she personally disliked. Employees at the stores regularly complained about Saldivar's behavior towards Selena, who complained about Saldivar's behavior to Selena, who dismissed the claims, believing Saldivar would not negatively impose erratic decisions on Selena's fashion venture. So according to so the staff later church, like I don't know what's going on. Never mind. So in the days before Selena's death, Saldivar delayed handing over bank statements and financial records, saying that she had been physically and sexually assaulted in Mexico. Saldivar, along with Selena, appeared at the medical clinic on March 31st, 1995 they to get her examined for an assault which she claimed happened in Monterrey. During the visit, Saldivar was given a brief physical examination by the clinic's doctor, but this did not include a gynecological exam specifically done in cases of sexual assault.
She lied. She lied.
Okay. It was suggested by nurse Carla Anthony that Saldivar needed to have the rape exam in San Antonio for three reasons. Saldivar was a resident of San Antonio, the clinic they were currently at in Corpus Christi, and the assault occurred in Mexico. Afterwards, Selena met with Saldivar in her hotel room in the Days Inn in Corpus Christi. At the hotel, Selena demanded the financial papers because there was this, all this thing about Saldivar basically taking all of this money. Because
she was siphoning funds.
She was siphoning funds, correct. At the hotel, she demanded the financial papers. At 11:48 a.m., Saldivar got a gun from her purse and pointed it at Selena. As Selena attempted to flee, Saldivar shot her once on the right lower shoulder, severing an artery and causing a severe loss of blood. Critically wounded, Selena ran towards the lobby, leaving a 392-foot, 119 meters, that is, long trail of blood.
Oof.
She collapsed on the floor as the clerk called the emergency services with Saldivar still chasing after her and calling her a bitch. Before collapsing, Selena named Saldivar as her assailant and gave the number of the room where she had been shot. What a fucking boss bitch.
Yeah.
Seriously, so amazed. I was sad reading that though because I was like, her last words.
But like, she knew. She knew she had to say.
I know, like amazing, but also like sad that that was like her final moments.
Meanwhile, Saldivar attempted to leave in her pickup truck. She was, however, spotted by a responding police cruiser. She surrendered after a nearly 9.5 hour standoff with police and the FBI. By that time, hundreds of fans had gathered at the scene. Many wept as police took Saldivar away. So Selena was dead on arrival at the Corpus Christi Hospital. The attending emergency room physician made the decision to attempt to revive her. Cardiologist Louis Elkins continued the treatment and performed surgery based on the emergency room physician's decision. Doctors were able to establish an erratic heartbeat long enough to transfer her to the trauma room. After 50 minutes of surgery, she was pronounced dead from blood loss and cardiac arrest at 1:05 p.m.
I mean, she lost so much blood that it was like 119 meters long. I couldn't sprint that distance.
No. An autopsy performed on the same day due to overwhelming media interest. It revealed that the bullet had entered Selena's upper right back near the shoulder blade, passed through her chest cavity, severed the right subclavian artery and exited her right upper chest. Doctors said that if the bullet had been only 1 millimeter higher or lower, the wound would have been less severe. Oh, it's so sad. On April 1st, Bayfront Plaza in Corpus Christi held a vigil which drew 3,000 fans. On April 3rd, 1995, 600 guests, mostly family members, attended Selena's burial at Seaside Memorial Park in Corpus Christi, Texas, which was broadcast live by Corpus Christi and San Antonio radio station with the consent of her family. So sad. Selena's murder had a widespread impact. Reactions to her death were compared to those following the deaths of musicians John Lennon, Elvis Presley, and U.S. President John F. Kennedy. Major television networks interrupted their regular programming to break the news. Yeah. I feel awful. It's so sad. And yeah, go watch the movie with J-Lo. It's pretty iconic.
It's
Why
so
are
good.
You laughing?
Because when you said the deaths of Elvis Presley, my brain went, but Elvis isn't dead.
Yeah, he is.
That's me being on the music conspiracy subreddit for too long. It's like, what? He's
Wait,
in Mexico.
I saw his
He works in a deli.
Year.
Like, No, Elvis is dead. So are all these musicians.
So sad. Don't murder people.
Don't murder people.
Don't murder people.
What I've learned from this is that if you're a famous person who is shot, doctors will try incredibly hard to revive you even if you have no pulse or blood in your body.
What I've learned from this is that a lot of the murders that you both talk about in Australia, not all of them have guns in them.
Guns, man.
Guns, man, right.
All of these
people were
American,
shot.
American. shot.
Yeah, no, we don't.
I wonder
have
if there's something that can be learnt from that.
Nah, I just don't know. I just don't
maybe if
know.
More people had guns.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun, right?
What stops a good guy with a gun, though?
The police.
Ah. What stops a police with a gun?
Oh, that thing.
Another police officer.
It's a fun game.
So much fun.
So thanks for having us. Sorry we took up like all the fucking time.
Oh, we didn't do Biggie and Tupac because we are way too white.
Yeah. Sorry.
I wanted Jess to do it because I thought it would be funny, but she was like, nah, busy. And I was like, ah. But Biggie and Tupac, also, you should watch that documentary that's on Netflix. It's really good. Yeah. Thank you for listening to our list of, not our top, but just a list of 5 murdered musicians and 1 suicide.
Yeah.
Very catchy title. That will be the title of this episode.
Yeah. Correct. 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 Okay.
Okay.
Do we need to say anything?
Yep. Yeah.
Cool. Peace.
Nailed it.
So sorry.
1 mess. War, famine, politics.
Why can't everyone just get along?
Yeah, like in musicals. Musicals fix everything.
If people listened and learned from musicals, everything would be better.
Music, lights, and spontaneous choreography. What isn't there to love?
If you want to learn all of life's important lessons,
or just listen to some musical theatre nerds wax lyrical,
subscribe to Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, wherever you find fun and funny podcasts.
Or at our website at thatsnotcanonproductions.com.
A That's Not Canon Productions podcast.